Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 16th. I'm Ray Graff. You know what stinks? What stinks is when you neglect that little check engine light on your car. Or maybe you hear a rattle and you don't do anything about it. And next thing you know, an enormous snowstorm bears down on your town. And you're driving home and your car breaks down and you're in traffic and people are beeping. The snow plows can't get by. Next thing you know, the police are involved. And you say one wrong thing. You're doing time. It costs you thousands of dollars. Your car's impounded. All because you didn't take care of your car. Well, thankfully, this doesn't have to happen to you. Gordon Fricke's here to take your car calls. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You got a car question, Gordon can help right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. Today is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, and he is a great guest on this program and a popular one. Call early is my advice. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can, of course, email us at voxpopwamc.org. But, we get to as many emails as we can, just like with the phones. Good bet right now, while we have a few open lines, call 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, how you doing, buddy?
Ray, I'm doing very well. How are you?
Is it snowing there yet in Hoosick Falls?
I just cried wolf. I do that prior to snowstorms. I will yell out, look, here comes the first snow, and it's not even near snowing yet. I just want to get people's reaction. But no, nothing yet.
So people throw wrenches at you and stuff when you do that?
Well, they always look out the window after I say that.
Good thing you own the shop. Somebody would get very... All right, we'll get right to it today. This email came in about a half an hour ago, over a half an hour ago. This one's from Olga. Olga says, what happens inside your car when you wait way too long, and I mean way too long, to get your oil changed? And that's from Olga.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a really good question, because we talk about this every show, I think, without fail. So if you wait way, way, way too long, if your vehicle is consuming some oil, which all engines do, some more than others, then you're in critical danger of running way too low and providing the engine with some serious damage due to lack of lubrication. And that could be catastrophic, possibly the end of the engine.
Oh, boy.
If you don't run too low, the oil is going to be very broken down in its chemistry and its lubricating abilities. It's going to be full of debris, carbon, all kinds of materials that don't want to be in it. So it's premature wear is really the main culprit there. And if you do that oil change after oil change after oil change, you're going to have engine problems early on in the vehicle's life.
Now, let's assume that you burn through a quart every, let's just say, 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
And you go 7,000 miles between oil changes. My question for you is, theoretically, how much oil do you have to have in that case, the crankcase or whatever you call it nowadays, before the engine seizes up? In other words, half a quart or what?
Well, that's a good, very good question, because we have gotten cars in the shop, removed the drain plug, and watched about 3/4 of a quart come out and say, how did this thing survive?
Yeah.
So if the engine's made to hold, let's just use the old 5-quart thing, that means that you can theoretically lose a quart when it's time to add and still be fine. So now you got 4 quarts in there. Hmm. If you go down to 3 quarts on a 5-quart system, it's still not going to self-destruct, but the lower it gets, the more trouble you're in. You get down to a couple of quarts and you're on pretty thin ice.
You know, I think I've told you this story before. In the old days, they made this stuff called Slick 50, which was an additive that the oil change places would use.
Yeah.
And I had an old Hyundai. This is back in the 80s. And I took it in for an oil change. Well, this place, and I will not name the place, although I think they're long out of business, they forgot to put the oil in.
Oh.
And they put the Slick 50 in, and I then went a little ways and took it to my took it back and said, you know, there's something wrong. There was no oil in the thing, but the Slick
just the Slick 50
kept it going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were running on Slick 50 basically only.
And good thing it was a Hyundai, or else I probably would have noticed earlier. Let's go to the one more email here, and then we'll go to the phones. This one is from David in Kingston. David says, I have a 2010 Honda Fit. Recently, while navigating a parking spot, I accidentally knocked off the vinyl running board detail. Is it something easy to reattach, or am I better off taking it to an auto body shop? And that's from David in Kingston.
Well, if the tabs or whatever holds it on have been broken or compromised, then you need a new one. Okay. If it can be snapped back into place, if it just popped it out of there and didn't break any of the retainers or didn't break them all, you might be able to pop it back in place. And sometimes those things can live without one or two of the clips, you know, if they're in the middle, not in the ends, you know?
Yeah. Okay. By the way,
I have a text message that I failed to answer, and let me read it.
Uh-oh. All right.
Is the four-wheel drive shift on the fly, or does it have to be stopped? I need to instruct my young driver before he drives the vehicle. And it's a 2000 Chevy Blazer.
Okay, all right. So you waited all this time to answer
yes,
my question.
I said I'm going to, since I didn't respond to you very quickly, I just held it till today.
Okay. But what's the answer?
But the answer is you can run that vehicle in four-wheel auto all the time,
yep,
which I think yours has.
Yep.
You can also go in and out of four-wheel high while you're moving.
Right.
As long as you're not spinning or getting stuck and the drive axles or the drive shafts are at different speeds, because then you'll get some crashing sounds.
Interesting. So, well, I told him, this is my son's vehicle, and I told him to just leave the auto on before the storm,
yeah,
and he'll be all right.
But he could go to the next level down, which is four-wheel high all the time.
Yep.
No harm leaving it in there, especially if he ventures out tomorrow, which he probably shouldn't, but after the storm, you know.
You know, it's funny. I was reading up on it, not hearing back from you for all that time. I was reading up on it, and four-wheel low, I had originally told him, I said, never go into four-wheel low because that's only for getting out of snowbanks and stuff. And I looked it up, and I was completely wrong. It doesn't help you in snowbanks at all.
No. I'd avoid putting it in it. That
yep,
vehicle is old enough to where it may choose not to come out very nicely at all, and now you're stuck in four-wheel low. So don't even use it.
Roger that. Well, by the way, before the Hyundai owners come at me and the Hyundai Corporation, God forbid, the Hyundai that I had was the first run of Hyundais. It was in the 80s, and it was
yeah,
very inexpensive car. They're beautiful now, though. And so
yeah, those early ones were like testing the waters. They weren't that great, but they've made great strides since then.
You want to know something? That Hyundai Excel, and I think it was the first year, it was a standard transmission, no bones car. I drove it for a long time, and then I ended up giving it to my mother, who drove it a long, long time, and the thing just stayed together. So
they definitely were good cars for that kind of money.
All right, one more email. Oh, no, I did that one. We'll tell you what, let's go to one call, and then we will take a break and then hit the phones for real. 800-348-2551 if you have a car question for Gordon Fricke. Michael in Germantown. Michael, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon. I've got a 2016 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Ah, there you go.
And it's got about 158,000 miles on it. And I was driving it yesterday on the Taconic State Parkway, and I started to notice that when I was going up hills, I was having trouble maintaining my speed by accelerating slightly. And it quickly got worse to where when I was going up a hill, I had the gas pedal on the floor, literally, and I was still losing speed down to 40, 30 miles an hour. I had to have my flashers on. So I was only getting about 1,500 RPMs. I managed to make it all the way home, and I called my mechanic this morning, and I've got an appointment on Monday morning. But I'm wondering, for one thing, can I drive it? If I go out today, my mechanic said I might go out there and the computer might reset itself or something because there was a glitch and it might just work fine. But he didn't know that. But
yeah, no, there is the remote possibility or distinct possibility that the occurrence you had is now over. And I would definitely drive the car and see how it reacts prior to bringing it in. If it's doing the same thing as it was before, okay, the problem is there and it's locked in. And that's kind of a good thing because you can then solve it. If it runs perfectly well, like the problem never existed, your mechanic's going to have to go by some history in the computer potentially of some codes if there's any in there. So, yeah, I would drive it again and just see if the problem is still there and then just take it from there.
What sensor was not reading? This is something to do with the transmission and it was not kicking down to a lower gear there, Gordon?
Well, the question always is it the engine or is it the transmission causing a condition like this? Because the transmission reacts to the engine. If the engine's losing power, the transmission doesn't know the difference. It thinks you're either going up Mount Everest or, you know, something's drastically wrong, and it just tries to compensate. And or if the transmission stays in a high gear, it'll lug the engine down like crazy. So you got to sort out who's got the problem and then differentiate between an engine or a transmission issue.
All right, Michael, we got to take a break, but thank you for being the first caller today. We'll get back to many more calls in a moment with Gordon Fricke. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke. The number is 800-348-2551. Now, Gordon, if you see any snow, I want you to yell out, all right?
All right, I'll try before the show's out if I get a flake or two up here.
All right, let's go to Ken in Wilton. Ken, you're up.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, I have a 2012 Honda Accord that's got 287,000 miles on it, and a year ago I had it serviced by a guy who was at one time, you know, hotshot guy, head mechanic with a local, you know, Honda dealer. And he said to me, don't worry about your water pump. Don't worry about your, belt, serpentine belt. You're doing fine. What do you say?
What year is the car again?
2012.
A 12. Okay, so a 12 Accord does not have a timing belt. It's a chain-driven engine.
Okay.
So they don't require the preventive replacement intervals like the external belts did. They rely
in other
on
words,
engine. Now they rely on the engine oil to take care of them as far as maintenance and lubrication goes. That being said, that vintage Honda Accord had some timing chain issues on mainly on engines that had neglected maintenance, very infrequent oil changes that would stretch that timing chain and wear the gears out and it would go haywire. As far as the water pump goes, he's absolutely right there too. You really don't need to do anything about that water pump until it gives you trouble.
Okay.
Good.
So
news.
He's right.
Good.
All right, Ken, thanks a lot for the call and let's go to I see. Kingston, New York. Sebastian, you've been waiting a while. Go ahead.
Hi. So I got a 2011 Traverse, and about 6 months ago, the engine light came on. Turned out to be a bank 2, and my mechanic said it's the catalytic converter. Well, 6 months ago, I wasn't about to do anything. So now I'm wondering, did I cause any damage by driving it occasionally, or is it okay till I get around to fixing it soon?
Do you know more specifically what the code said? Was it a catalytic converter efficiency code?
Ooh, I think it was like a 420 code or 4002 code, something like that.
Yes, no, PO420 for sure is catalytic converter efficiency. And what that means is the computer is is thinking or indicating that PO420, which is the Bank One catalytic converter, is not cleaning up the air as it should, which could be that the converter is getting tired out, or it could be a sensing issue with your front and rear oxygen sensors. To answer your question, no, you didn't harm anything. So you're fine in as far as getting it checked into now and driving it, you know, didn't harm the engine or the converter. Is the light still on this whole time?
I used my little OBD2 thing and cleared it, and it hasn't come back.
If it has not come back, the system is satisfied that there's no current problem. So what I would do is I would put some additive in the fuel that will help clean the converters and the sensors just to sharpen up their ability to work. And you can use a product that's designed to clean. It's called Cataclean, and or you can use Tecron. And that certainly will help sharpen your sensors and maybe clean up a little bit of a film that might be on that catalytic converter to boost its efficiency.
All right. Great.
So I think you're in good shape. I would do that first.
Sebastian, thank you for the call. The number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke of Barber and Fricke Automotive is here to answer your car questions today. And Tom is in Kingston. Tom, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hello. Thank you, Ray. And by the way, Vox Pop is wonderful. I don't know how you do it from bird watching to the wall. But anyway, about the car, I'm really curious about something. Modern cars have, you know, these computers in them, and I know that they take data from the car to fuel inject the control at the RPMs. Is any of that information, is it saved where it would function as a sort of a black box after a collision? Is there a way to determine something about what the vehicle was doing when it had a collision?
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm really curious if, for instance, if I was at a stop sign and someone recklessly hit me, front-ended me, you know, hit me in the front, and then claimed that I hit them, would the machine corroborate my account of the story? Could it be used forensically?
Yes, it would. Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Okay. Tell me more about it.
All modern cars, and the newer they are, the more elaborate the computing power has become. But there is a, quote, black box in your car, and it's incorporated in the airbag computer, the supplemental restraint systems module. And what that does is it records driving conditions, and it also saves a little bit of information going backwards in the event of a crash. So let's say your airbags deploy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. I don't even know if the car dealers can, but the manufacturers and the insurance companies are able to, in the event of a fatal crash where they need to really know what happened, that information can be accessed. And it tells you the speed your vehicle was traveling, the angle of the steering wheel, the yaw rate, you know, if you're a pilot, yeah, you know what yaw is, right? It will determine if your anti-lock braking was functioning. Let's say it had to modulate some brakes in the event of a spin or an out of control situation. Tell you if your foot's on the brake, engine RPM, whole bunch of stuff is in those computers. So to answer your question, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of great. Interesting.
I've been wondering about
that. All right. Well, thank you. That's really all I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Tom. We appreciate it very much. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Our guest is Gordon Fricke, and Terry is in Stillwater. Terry, you're up.
Yes, sir. This might be a silly question, but we have a 2012 Cadillac that we haven't had quite a year. And shortly after, we noticed the radio bounces around. In other words, it'll go from one speaker when you hit a button to the other speaker and so forth. And my husband's under the impression that trying to trace down electronic problems like that can be very, very expensive. What is your input on what something like this might cost to get to the bottom of it?
Yeah.
I tend to be a little OCD with things like this.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Yeah, so years ago, you know, the radio, quote, stereo was almost a completely separate device or system in your vehicle. Today, they're very integrated. And on that year Cadillac, it's integrated. It's not like you can pull out the radio and pop another one in there. So internal failures could cause what you're having happen there. And in that case, there's not much to do other than total change out. What you could do, though, is go into your sound settings and just move some things around. You can change your balance, your fader, depending on how elaborate your system is. You can change the position of the sound. In other words, it'll make the sound different for the passenger versus the driver. Only do one change at a time, but move the sound around and just see if it changes it or makes it better or eliminates the problem. And it may be glitching in where it's been programmed for the whole car's life. So make changes in the sound part of it, which used to be called bass, treble, and tone, but there's more stuff now. Your car might even have surround. It might have, subwoof control. You have a lot of stuff in those cars now, so I would do that.
Here's something that happened last week that I said, maybe it's coming from the trunk. I took off, was driving, and I noticed the trunk light was indicating that the trunk was open. I drove along because I couldn't stop right then and there to close the trunk, but maybe I hit a bump or something, but the trunk slammed down and the radio started working fine. Oh. You know, it came to the speakers were working. Before, it was very, very low, the volume. I'm just trying to figure out where the problem might be, but that may have not had anything to do with it. Probably not, right?
I don't know about that.
Well, no, it is possible that there is some feature that mutes the sound when the trunk is open. That's not impossible at all.
Let me ask you a question, Gordon. Is the amplifier for this thing, or series of amplifiers, underneath, you open the trunk and it's sort of underneath between the window and where the trunk door is?
It can be.
Because, I mean, maybe it's just a loose connection to one of those things, which would explain the low volume level.
Is it a Bose system?
I'm not sure, sir.
Okay.
It's not a fancy, it doesn't have a fancy system. There's no camera in it or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that many features.
Cadillac did partner with Bose in a lot of their sound systems, and the Bose units do have, like Ray was saying, they do have amps and controls usually in the back of the car because they take up a lot of space. And Bose always has a subwoofer. That's part of their signature sound. And that subwoofer is definitely in the trunk of that car somewhere. Definitely the trunk is a possible area to look.
All right, Terry, good luck, and thank you very much for the call. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke. Kara is in New Paltz. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, so I have a 2005 Pontiac Vibe, and I just got it like 2 or 3 months ago, and I've been noticing now that it's colder when I start the car. If it's like 35 degrees or less, I get this like grinding or scratching noise when I engage the starter and turn the key. And my mechanic said there's nothing that they can do about it because they didn't hear the noise. It only happens on a cold start. So I was wondering what's going on there.
And you only hear it during the cranking part of the start?
Yeah,
only when you're
like goes off.
Go ahead, Kara.
Only when I initially turn the key, when it cranks, it'll turn over just fine, but at first it'll make this like scratching or grinding noise.
Do you hear that scratching or grinding noise after the engine has already started running, and does that last for any period of time?
No, it only lasts for like one or two seconds, and then once the engine is on and running and warm, it's fine. Like, if I stop the car after, you know, having driven for 15 minutes, the engine's nice and warm, the temperature hasn't changed, it won't make that sound again. It's only, like, after sitting at night in the cold weather.
Mm.
Would you call it, like, a clattering or a rattling sound that goes for about 5 to 10 seconds?
No, it's literally, it just sounds like if you over-engage the starter, you know, like if the car's already started and you try and crank it again, it sounds just like that, but I'm not over-engaging the starter. It's just a normal key turn.
Yeah. So this is what I would do if it's consistent. Every morning, make an appointment.
Every morning, now that it's colder.
Yeah, make an appointment so you can leave the car dropped off for the whole night at the repair shop. And then they'll hear it when they start it the next morning. And then they'll have some recommendations based on what they hear. They've got to hear it. They've got to, their ears have to hear what you're hearing to confirm that it's a, yes, it's a starter issue, or no, it's something else, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what I would do. Get it dropped off the night before.
Is it a question, Gordon, of maybe the oil or gas flow, it hasn't happened yet? The reason I ask, yesterday I was tuning up the snowblower for tonight and tomorrow.
You're ahead of me.
And, well, you know, I had the 50-to-1 mix, and I got some more, and I put a little seafoam in the engine, just let it run. But I couldn't start it with a pull start, so I used the electric starter, which I never do. And just like Kara said, there was like a grinding sound for a few seconds, and then it kicked, and then it ran fine. Blew out a lot of blue smoke, but that's another story. But anyway, what I'm saying is it seemed like it wasn't getting any fuel at first, and that was where that grinding sound came from.
Well, again, I would want to hear this firsthand. I'd want to have my hand on the key, and once the mechanic hears that those sounds or that concern, then they can say, yeah, it sounds like your starter is getting tired and you know, you might want to replace it, and here's how much it is, or you could, you know, go a little longer and see if it continues. But there can be other things making those noises. They need to differentiate that before they, you know, go crazy and replace stuff.
All right, Kara, thanks for the call. Now, one more call here before the next break, and let's go over to Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Gordon and Ray. I got a couple of questions. I got a 2060 Black Jeep limited edition. And I was wondering, my first question, I got it washed yesterday and I took it through the car washer the same twice in one day. And my other question is, if I took it, could I possibly wash the engine myself? And also the other thing, Gordon, is, could it be washed inside also, or no? Is that bad?
Huh.
I'd like to...
Inside of what? The engine compartment? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the inside of the engine compartment.
Yeah. I would be careful doing that because of electronics, ignition coils. If the engine gets power washed or heavily washed, there's water getting on stuff that normally never ever does, and you can get water inside of the spark plug areas where the ignition coils are located, and that water will never evaporate out, and you can have misfiring, check engine light flashing, terrible running, and to straighten that out can cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So I would avoid doing a engine wash. If you're going to have that, if you're going to do it, have a detail shop do it that knows how to be careful around those components.
Okay.
So I would avoid that.
All right.
Now, one more question, Gordon. Is it safe to, I like to keep my cars clean, Gordon, and I did it the other day. I took it through the car wash twice during the same day. Is that safe to do?
Well, it doesn't really harm anything, but did you get it dirty later in the day, or you just wanted to get it double washed?
double washed Corvette.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, not really. I mean, I know people that are on the road a lot, and they get these coupons at the major car washes, and it's like an unlimited thing per month, right, Ray? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I haven't had my car washed since 1994, so I couldn't really help you there.
I've seen the stickers on people's windshields, so I think you can get these, you know, coupons. So I know some people wash their cars, you know, every 2, 3, 4 days if it's bad weather.
Yeah.
If you really, you know, want a super clean job, get it, and maybe you already have, take it to a detailing shop, and then it really will look great.
Right.
You know, with, which is hand polishing and interior and all that stuff. But to answer your question, no.
Okay.
No, I think you're okay doing that.
Right. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here, and he'll be back in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke joins us to answer your automotive questions today. I got to tell you got to find me this when you're out at those used car auctions. I want you to find a 1962 Chrysler Imperial.
A 62?
Oh, yeah. So, we, you know, one of the things we do every holiday season, and usually it's my wife and I, just us, we'll watch It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. And Milton Berle is cruising the roads with Ethel Merman in the back seat in a 62 Imperial convertible. And that is a car, man. That's
a funny. It's funny you say that because when I grew up out in East Hoosick, our neighbors just a couple houses down owned a very small Chrysler Plymouth dealership right here in Hoosick Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Gardner drove in those early years a 63, I believe it was, Imperial Crown.
Oh, yeah.
And it had the headlights that were on separate pods. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. That was a very, very cool car.
Yep. I tell you what, that particular movie, if you're a car person of a certain age, you're just like, oh, look at this.
I love that movie. Yeah. I've seen it a bunch of times. Yeah.
Can't watch it enough. This email from David. Oh, no, we did this one from David. Hang on. This one is from Jason in Ulster Park. I have a 2006 Buick LaCrosse. Fastest speed setting on the windshield wipers goes very slow, but all the other speeds are fine. Is this a relay switch of some kind? I think it's not the motor as the other speeds work. Any ideas?
So high speed's really not high speed.
Correct. That's what Jason says.
Yeah. So they used to be controlled by the lever really engaged two different connections, which changed the voltage to the motor, but that car's probably got a body controller. I think it needs to get plugged in and just see if there's any body controller issues that are not juicing up that motor to high speed.
Well,
so it's going to be some diagnostic issues unless it's okay the way it is. Then he just leaves them on the normal, you know, the low speed.
Depending on the cost of that particular repair, I'm thinking, okay, just go with the flow, right?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay, this one's from Pam. Pam says, we have a certified 2019 Honda CR-V that we purchased in September. I've noticed the temperature gauge will sometimes not rise to the proper running temperature, but holds about halfway up. Or sometimes the gauge will go to running temperature, and then after driving a few miles, drop back to halfway. Or sometimes the gauge will be at running temperature and then plummet to the cold level. Interestingly, heat is still being produced. Have had this back to the dealership for this problem once and was told there is nothing wrong but normal operation. Since my issue is intermittent, is there any hope the dealership service department will be able to diagnose it and fix it? And that's from Pam.
Yeah. That's a good question, because if the heat, if she was losing heat when that gauge went to full cold, you would say it's a thermostat issue. It's the engine temperature is not being regulated properly. But on a 19 CRV, the check engine light would be watching it as closely as she was, if not closer, and it would turn on the light for a cooling system performance code. So I'm thinking it's a sensing issue in the light or the gauge is responding incorrectly. And what I would do, and this may not really help anything other than to prove her case, is to take some either videos or pictures of the gauge when it has dropped. Okay. And, you know, just to kind of do some time markings on it, or, you know, you don't want to do a video going down the road, but, you know, if you can document, here's the gauge now, and look, 20 seconds later, it's down to a quarter, and then 20 seconds later, bang, it came back up.
Yeah.
If it's a warranty issue, you want, you know, at least want to get some documentation in case the problem can't be solved for a while, you know?
Yeah.
All right. I don't think it's a big issue. I think it's probably just a gauging problem.
Well, yeah, because if it wasn't, the car would have gone belly up already, probably.
Yeah,
right?
It would have given you symptoms or her symptoms, yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Eric, you're in Hudson, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is, I have a 2011 Volkswagen Jetta, and I am on my shaft position sensor. Any ideas?
You say crankshaft position sensor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of blanked out for a second. So crankshaft position sensor.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. I'm on my third one, and they've all been Volkswagen sensors. They're not aftermarket sensors.
So what are your symptoms? Is it just a check engine light, or does the car quit running or run terribly or fail to start?
So the car you'll start the car up fine. It will drive fine. All of a sudden, the check engine light will come on, and it will lag. You can put the gas to the floor, and it doesn't do anything. You let it off and give it a second, and then it'll come back, and then it'll take off.
So when it goes to the shop, and you may not know this, but is there only one code, and was that only code there saying that it's a crankshaft position sensor circuit problem?
Yes, that's been the only P code that comes up. It just says the sensor is bad.
Yeah. So to have that many factory sensors fail is not really – there's more to it than that. If you told me they were using no-name imitation sensors, I'd say, yeah, I don't trust them. I'd get a factory sensor. But it looks like that's already been the case there. Wire connections, and you know, this is what drives guys like us nuts, because it takes so much time to troubleshoot and rule out weird things. But the condition of that connector that goes to that sensor is critical, and in some cars you can buy replacement connectors because the connector tends to be a problem. And they realize that, and they offer you a replacement sensor. And VW does make some of those. So I'd be very concerned about the connector to the crankshaft position sensor itself, and be sure that it is going completely, and I'm sure you guys have already done this, but make sure that sensor is inserted 100% straight and true all the way, because the gap is a big issue between the sensor and the crank that it's reading. And then I would probably want to see if any debris comes out on the tip of that sensor, because it's a magnet. And if you can, is it a 5-cylinder Jetta? Is it a 2.5 liter?
Yes.
Yeah, the 2.5, I can't remember if that sensor's in a bad spot where you can't look inside the hole.
Very much so.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
They tried to show me, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, that's right. Some of them are in a really nice spot, and some are in a horrendous location. But there could be other things.
So I'll just ask them to replace the connector.
Well, I'd be suspicious of it. You know, I wouldn't just say go ahead and do it, but it's possible that connector is marginal. And when the sensor gets changed, the connector goes on and off, and the connection kind of gets scratched back in. And then maybe after a while it starts to fail again. So it could be. That's what I'd be concerned with that.
Eric, thanks for the call. Over to, let's see, Montague. Stu, you're on.
Hey, hi, thanks. I've got a 1989 Ram 100 4x4. It's a plow truck I use for my driveway. I'm leaking gear oil. It's coming out of the shaft on the right front. Is that an easy fix? I believe it's a seal.
Is this you talking about your front axle, your front drive axle?
Yes.
And it's leaking out where the wheel joint shaft goes into the differential. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, the shaft.
Yeah, but you're talking front drive, right? Your front drive, your front wheels.
Yes.
Which side?
Right side.
Bad. Very difficult job.
Oh, that's bad news.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen those, but if my memory serves me, those seals are way, way in towards the differential, not out by the wheel. And it's a really, okay. If it's the truck I think it is, it's a really nasty job to change that seal.
Okay. Any other suggestions? The gear oil? Should I use a heavier gear oil?
Well, yeah. So if it's not a massive leak, and the truck's used intermittently, you could squeeze some Lucas treatment in there, which is a viscosity thickener, and it will make the stuff leak less, and it's good for the gears, and it doesn't seem to create a big problem in super cold weather. So I would try some additives. You know, there's a brand called Lucas that works very well.
I'll go with that route. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
thanks
okay.
for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and looks like David in Sullivan County. David, you're on.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a problem with a 2008 Camry hybrid, and I started it up in the morning. It started, and I live on a little of a hill, drove, and all of a sudden, no brakes, nothing, and then on the system, it said check BSC system.
So when you say no brakes, hard pedal, you had to push it way harder to get it to stop, or did the pedal go right to the floor?
I had no brakes. I had no brakes. I had to press it with all my weight to stop the car.
Yikes.
But where did the pedal go? Almost to the floor?
That's a good question.
How did the brake pedal feel?
I think so, yeah. It felt
heavy. What year is the car again?
2008 Camry Hybrid.
Those cars didn't have really any brake line corrosion issues too terribly. So if your pedal went almost to the floor, I would be concerned that you had a rusted through brake line somewhere. But if the pedal is as hard as a rock and it doesn't move much and you had to press down with 2 feet, then you could
that's
have
it.
A
that's
brake.
It.
That's what happened?
Yeah.
That could be a brake booster issue. That's the unit that gives you your extra braking assistance. The problem is it's being a hybrid. You have regen braking tied in. So when you're off the accelerator and on the brake pedal, you're helping to recharge the battery. So there's a dual braking mode happening there. So that car needs to get definitely scanned. There should be there's going to be some information in that. In the braking computer, the ABS and the brake systems, could be a booster failure, but it needs to get diagnosed for sure. And by the sounds of it, towed.
Oh yeah, it has to be towed.
Oh
yeah.
Man,
yeah,
all right. Well, yeah. Good luck, David. Appreciate the call. Just quickly now, let's go over to Cindy in Williamsburg. Cindy, you're on.
Hi, thanks. Yes, I have a 2016 Honda Fit, and about a month or so ago, I had a check engine light go on. It was not blinking, but anyway, I had it looked at by my own mechanic, who it was a P171 code, 0171, in case I didn't say that, and so he checked the vacuum lines, couldn't find any leaks. cleaned the mass airflow sensor.
Yep.
And the only thing left to do was to change the oxygen sensor. So that got changed, and then a couple days later, the light came back on. And so
yeah.
I've taken it to the dealership, and they've diagnosed it as having to do with fuel injectors. And I guess my question is, it's got about 85,000 miles on it, and I just am trying to understand what caused the fuel injectors to go bad.
Well, so that's a lean code. 171 means that the engine, the computer feels that the engine is not getting enough gasoline in relation to the air, so it's too lean. It's not enough fuel. So you're concerned with vacuum leaks if it's a condition that's at idle or at low throttle openings. If it's at higher speeds and under load, it's a fuel flow issue, which could be a fuel filter, which on that car is integrated into the pump, I believe. And the fuel injectors are responsible for providing fuel to the engine. What I always do in a situation like that, and I don't know where your 171 is, if it's a loaded issue or sitting at idle, but super strong gas treatments are very quick, very easy, and rule out a cleanable deposit issue by driving the vehicle. So if the car is back in your possession and you haven't committed to any injector work, I would do some back-to-back treatments of Tecron and just see if that helps out the situation before you spend the money on other stuff.
Okay, unfortunately, it's too late.
Could be plugging injectors, you know?
You just say it was too late, Cindy?
Yes, unfortunately, yes. I have a loaner vehicle as we speak.
Yeah, well, don't despair. I mean, because sometimes you can't solve those problems with the additive, but a lot of times you can, because fuel deposits are so common today, and they create so much trouble that that's usually the first best step.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next time I will remember.
All right.
Okay,
Cindy.
Well, you can use it any time in any vehicle, so it's a good thing.
All right, you know, in the last 20 seconds or so, for those who have never used an additive like that, that you put in the gas tank, you put it in when it's empty and you're about to fill up, correct?
Well, you can put it in any time, because that fuel's it's all going to blend in with what's in the tank. So you could dump it right on top of a full tank, but it's really nice to do at fill-up time. So you put your additive in, and then you fill your tank with gas. So it blends in, you know, right there and then at the gas station.
Yeah.
And you get a nice mix for that full tank full of gas.
By the way, we got an email here. Very helpful listeners we have here. Brian wrote me and said, hey, just checked Hemmings. There's an identical 62 Imperial convertible from California, 45,000 miles. It's $44,000, Gordon.
$44,000 miles and $44,000?
It's 45,000 miles, $44,000. You think Santa might leave it under the tree?
Why don't you wish for it and see what happens?
I haven't been that good this year. I got to be honest with you.
Maybe you'll get like a 1/17th scale model of that car.
I've actually gotten that, and I'll tell you that story another time. Hey, man, we're done. Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next year, all right?
Yes, yes, you too. Great.
Talk to you. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years, QFCC.com. And Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, working to provide a healthy and safe environment, providing education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world, reopening 5 days a week in person, K-12, waldorfsaratoga.org for information. Once again, thanks to the great Gordon Fricke for joining us today. Thank you for listening. I apologize to the 10 people who are on the line that I didn't get to. It's the way we roll. Gordon will be back next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy for being our engineer, as he always is. Our producer, Jackie Orchard, Jordan Yuxall, took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, you're going to be achy from the shoveling. We'll have a physical therapist here, Matthew Goodemote, and you can whine to him. Meanwhile, stand by for 51%.